Can a 2016 SEC rule cause money market rates to go negative? Is there further evidence that the U.S. economy is slowing? And is the bond market telling the labor market that the recovery is over? Plus, a phenomenal gap by Yahoo News. You got to see it to believe it. The answer to those questions is more on today's Macro Show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. And appropriately, we're in front of the Federal Reserve Building for today's show. Why? Because in what can only be considered a made-for-TV type of news event, thanks to a fan who sent me a link to an interview done over a year ago. I was doing some digging, and there's more to the story that's going to come. But could you believe that the reason the Fed is bailing out money markets is to keep the SEC from looking bad? And would you also believe that it's possible if we can continue on our current trajectory with the Fed bailing out money markets to the reverse repo, that all money markets might actually be backed entirely by the Fed at some point? I know, sounds almost too good to be true, but let's go back to where the story begins in 2016, and we'll walk through how we got where we're at today. We'll start by money market rule 2A-7, and this article titled by Investopedia, How Money Markets Got Safer. Well, they may have gotten safer, but they clearly didn't get better. So if we go back to the great financial crisis, you might remember that money markets broke the buck briefly, and it was a bad thing, and it got fixed. And anytime something that's not supposed to break does break, well, there's future regulation is going to fix it, because money market rates in the United States are not supposed to go below a dollar. They're not supposed to break the buck. They're not supposed to go negative. So the SEC stepped in and fixed the problem with this rule 2A-7. So let's go down here and see what it is they did. And they recognized the threat to the financial system that would have caused a systemic collapse of money market funds and responded with rule 2A-7. This regulation requires money market funds to restrict their underlying holdings to investments that have more conservative maturities and credit ratings than those previously permitted to be held. Now, let me give you the translation to that. It says, underneath all that, that money markets can only invest in treasury bills, T-bills. That's it now. So in the past, they could do other things. With this rule, 2A-7, T-bills only. So I want you to be thinking a little bit of the Monday show where we talked about, you know, Zoltan's view of how the money markets are getting bailed out and are shedding treasury bills to the reverse repo. There's a reason, because that's all they're allowed to buy when you put your money in a money market. Now, I want you to keep, and another thing to keep in mind, you know, if you look at the big picture here of what's going on, Americans don't like to buy U.S. debt. We've got a lot of it that needs someone to buy it. So how is it you're buying it? Well, if you have money in the money markets, it's backed by the T-bills, or sooner you're about to find out the Fed. Got money in a commercial bank? Guess what? You also own, indirectly, U.S. Treasury securities. So all the government is doing is creating more regulations to get the financial system to buy more of our debt. Pretty cool, right? Well, let's go on, because this only gets more interesting. So from a maturity perspective, Rule 2A-7 stated the average dollar-weighted portfolio maturity of investments held in a money market fund cannot exceed 60 days. From a credit rating perspective, no more than 3% of the assets can invest in securities that do not fall within the first or second highest ranking tier. Well, you can guess what those are: treasury securities. So increased liquidity requirements also got more stringent, so we could make sure that if there was any confusion by this law of what you're supposed to buy, that you had to buy treasury securities as part of Rule 2A-7. For one, taxable funds must hold at least 10% of their assets and investments that can be converted into cash within one day. What would that be? Treasury bills. At least 30% of assets must be in investments that can be converted into cash within 5 business days. What could that be? You're right, T-bills. In addition, no more than 5% of assets can be held in investments that take more than a week to convert to cash. And if that wasn't convincing enough to get all the money market funds to buy T-bills, well, funds must undergo a stress test. And what is really good in stress test? You got it, T-bills, to verify their ability to maintain a stable NAV under adverse conditions. They're required to track and disclose the NAV based on market value of underlying holdings and to release that information on a 60-day delay at the end of any reporting period. So, very simple, money market funds are backed by T-bills. There's a T-bill shortage right now. But let's move forward on how this progressed, because in the early months of the pandemic, there was a problem. And the Fed didn't actually bail it out. No, they didn't. Well, I'll show you who. This guy, you might remember him, former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, well, he bailed out the money market. Now you say, well, how did he end up doing that? Well, money market rates were tanking. Here's four-week Treasury bills. And you can see the yields are crashing. And the Fed couldn't respond. They were too busy doing too many other things. And so Steven Mnuchin said, you know what? Do you want what is really important to do when you have a collateral shortage, when you have money flooding into money markets? How do you fix it? You issue more debt. And so he did. Under the CARES Act, he was allowed to issue a ton of debt, and he did. Here you see a Treasury General account. We've looked at this chart many times, going from around $400 billion all the way up to $1.8 trillion. So Mnuchin bailed out the money markets by issuing a massive amount of T-bills. Now, if you're wondering how I know this is all T-bills, is that's because how the government works. When they issue new debt, they issue it in the form of T-bills, and then over time, as those bills mature, they reinvest it into longer-term notes and bonds. So one of the things we know is this collateral shortage is going to get worse, because we've talked about it. As the TGA, the Treasury General Account, gets wound down to around $350 billion, these T-bills that are backing all this are going to mature and go away, causing further pressure on the overnight reverse repo, which is sitting somewhere between $700 and $800 billion a day. And now we know why this is going to get worse, because, you know, we go back to the what we talked about on Monday with Zoltan, and he said, look, there's no incentive, zero incentive for money markets to hold T-bills, because they can simply go to the reverse repo facility and get 0.05%, or what is referred to as 5 basis points. So they can get all of that they want. There's virtually no limit to them. Yeah, I know there's $80 billion to counterparty if we want to be technical, but Powell, Fed Chair Powell, can raise that limit, so it's not really a big deal. And as he indicated, that as money markets accounts that are holding T-bills, as those bills mature, that they're simply just going to let them go away and then take their cash to the reverse repo. And that's going to lead to trillions more in reverse repo problems, because those bills are more needed by the commercial banks to back, well, your deposits there. So there's this massive bill shortage, and we're going to see this huge surge in reverse repo. But what's interesting is where it started was with that SEC rule 2A-7. So if we go back, 2016, we planted the seeds for this problem to begin, and who would have known then that we'd have this problem now? So what the Fed is doing is they're bailing out the SEC through the money markets, because if the Fed did nothing, money market rates would go negative due to all this cash. You'd break the buck, and it would be wildly damaging to the U.S. financial system. But yet it gets worse. We're not going to cover how much worse this is going to get in today's show, but I've got to do a lot more research, but there's more to come, because the shortage of T-bills is only going to get worse. All the governments are doing is passing more and more regulation requiring the financial system to buy more and more government debt, particularly at the front end of the curve, which is what we're issuing not a whole lot of to meet the demand, which then leads us to believe that it's entirely possible that money markets could entirely be backed by the Fed's reverse repo facility at some point in the future. So now you know, if you have money in any of the large commercial U.S. banks, large U.S. commercial banks, or money markets, guess what your money's backed by? That's right, Treasuries and or the Fed. But let's take a look at the Fed meeting minutes today, because even they admit the problem is going to get worse. So these are the minutes from the last meeting. And what's great about these is they are subject to revisionary history. So after the Fed meets and they listen to what the response is from the markets and the media and everybody else, they rewrite parts of the minutes to make it look like whatever they needed to look like. So the manager noted downward pressure on money market rates continued over the period. So this would be prior to the last, between the last meet and this meet, banks continue to limit growth of their balance sheet by allowing wholesale liabilities to mature and encouraging customers to shift some non-operational deposits into money market funds. Oh, hey, we don't want your deposits. Go to the money market because it's going to be entirely backed by the Fed. Fantastic. Moreover, the supply of treasury bills, a primary investment for government money market funds, there you go, fell further. So they're admitting, look, we're losing, we don't have enough of these T-bills to go around to meet all the demand that we, by regulation, have created. Against this backdrop, the secured overnight financing rate, or SOFR, printed at 1 basis point each day, that's 0.01%, in their intermediate period, while the effective federal funds rate, EFFR, decreased 1 basis point to 6 basis points. Now, amid heightened demand and reduced supply for short-term investments, the overnight reverse repo continued to maintain a floor on overnight rates. Now, you know, this is important to understand, is that is the point of what reverse repo is designed to do. And many of you have emailed me about, you know, oh, maybe it's this or maybe no, it's designed for one thing and one thing only. In repo or reverse repo, it's designed to stabilize money markets. If there's too much cash, you take the cash out through reverse repo. If there's too much collateral, you inject cash through repo. That's what's going on here. So again, just want to make sure we're on the same page. Growth in the overnight repo and other non-reserve liabilities helped expand the base of Federal Reserve liability supporting asset purchase. Now, what does that mean? So let's break this apart. Helped expand the base of Federal Reserve liabilities. So what is a liability of the Federal Reserve? It's a reserve asset, that byproduct from that quantitative easing swap. So the Fed creates a liability on their balance sheet, swaps it with a commercial bank for a treasury or mortgage-backed security that's held as a reserve. And so the banks get a new asset in a different form, and that's a Fed liability. So now they're talking about quantitative easing here. So let's go back. So it said helped expand the base of Federal Reserve liabilities supporting asset purchases. So what they're saying, which is interesting, is that the reverse repo is helping them do more quantitative easing, which is fantastic because that's exactly, you know, how this whole system works. You know, if you think about it, what does QE do? It drives rates down. I know this, there you go, drives rates down. And instead of customers or bank deposits finding longer term maturities, such as like, you know, multi-year CDs or other investments, they sit in cash. So that's what QE does. QE needs cash. We talked about this before. QE needs cash to create bank reserves. And now you see the Fed is acknowledging that reverse repo is helping them do that. Fantastic. Dampening the increase in reserves, which would be customer deposits, and easing pressure on banks' balance sheets. So they're pretty much saying, look, this thing is working. It's exactly the way we thought. We created cash that we needed, and we're able to do more QE. Over the next intermediate period, the manager anticipated that further increases in reserves and reductions in bill supply could, now reserves, this is talking about bank deposits, and reductions in bill supply, this would be due to the TGA rolling off that we looked at, could put additional downward pressure on overnight rates. Aha! So what are overnight rates now? Pretty much next to zero. I mean, you know, people, I'm not suggesting we're about to have a financial crisis, but I want you to see just how close to the knife's edge the Fed is. One system, one of these things doesn't work, and you get the overnight rates go negative and the financial system just shatters apart. This is not good. So let's go back. Because now they're admitting that rates can go lower, which is pretty hard to believe because they're pretty darn low. A modest tactical adjustment administered to administered rates could be warranted to maintain the effective federal funds rate. So what they're saying now is, look, this could get so bad, we might have to do something else and make a tactical adjustment to keep the federal funds rate well within the target range and support smooth functioning of the short-term funding markets. Now they're admitting, look, if this thing doesn't work, that smooth functioning of short-term funding markets is not going to be smooth functioning anymore. Such an adjustment would be expected to raise the federal funds rate and lift other overnight rates modestly, which could be a very negligible term of how much that could move. We could be talking just a couple basis points. Most respondents to the desk surveys expected an administered rate adjustment this summer. So they're acknowledging now what Zoltan said. Look, this thing's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse, trillions of dollars worse, and the Fed is going to be forced to do something sooner than later. Now let's keep going. The manager noted the balances at the overnight repo facility would likely continue to grow over the coming months. So now, again, they're further admitting, look, yeah, we know this reverse repo is going to get worse. And what does that mean? You know, let's just stop here again. What does that mean for Treasury yields? Means lower. What does that mean for the dollar? Where's my bullish arrow? Boom. So what that means is lower yields, stronger dollar, which the market is massively betting on. Every time bond prices go up, there's more shorts. Dollar goes up, more shorts. Everybody's betting massively against this. So let's continue on. The staff would continue to monitor develops, and as the manager noted, at some point it could become appropriate to consider raising the counterparty limits. Aha, there you go. So look, they're totally admitting just how bad the situation is and how much worse it can get, because there's such a fine line now between where rates are at and where rates go negative. So now you can see where it came from. You can see why former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin did what he did, and why the Fed is doing what they're doing now, with a very real possibility that if rates could go, well, rates could go negative, it would be a really bad thing if they did, but how all money markets may be entirely backed by the Fed, and nobody will really know it. Now, let me show you this really funny gaffe by Yahoo. I don't know if it's still up, but boy, I got a good chuckle about it. It says, a move by Federal Reverse. Now, it should say, a move by the Federal Reserve could shake U.S. economy. No, a move by Federal Reverse, because they're talking about the potential asset taper of the Fed's balance sheet. We're not going to get into that today. I just thought that was hilarious. I even made a screen capture just in case it went away. Let's get into the economic data, because there's lots of great stuff in here showing us the economy is indeed slowing down. Oh, you know what I wanted to show you is that, you know, before we get to that brief moment, this is what I forgot to show you. Here's where 13-week Treasury bills went briefly negative back in March of last year, this year, and why the Fed why the Treasury had to respond the way it did. You can see back, let's zoom out. Well, you can see here's the original crash, -2.35, and then it went negative again. So here's where Steve Mnuchin steps in, and then there's a second one where the Fed has to react. So really, you can see they're working with 0.43%, not a whole margin, a lot of margin for error. All right, let's get into economic data. Great stuff here. Looking to our friends down under in Australia, services PMI now expand at a slightly slower rate. So 58 is an expansion, 56.8 expand at a slightly slower rate. So we're starting to see, you know, potential signs of a peak in the services sector. How about Japan? 46.5. Remember, under 50 is a contraction. Went to 48, so still a slight contraction over the prior month. So the services sector in Japan is not recovering, but we know they're still dealing with some COVID problems over there. How about we move over to China? The cakes and services PMI went from 55.1, so a bit of an expansion, to 50.3, saying almost no change from the month before. So you're seeing peak in the China services PMI. How about we move on into the Tuesday data? We'll zip over to Italy, and looking at June, their services PMI expanded at a faster rate. So 53.1 to 56.7. Now 53 isn't a whole lot of expansion, but hey, 56 is saying that the services sector grew at a faster rate than the prior month. So that's pretty good in Italy. Moving up a little up north into France, we see it expanded just a slightly bit faster rate. So 56.6 versus 57.8. So some potential signs of this peaking out as well. How about in Germany? Services sector went from 52.8 to 57.5. So we're seeing a bit more expansion in the service sector in the Eurozone. The question is, will that hold? The broad services PMI for the entire Eurozone went from 55 to 58.3. So, you know, remember, what happens in Asia will eventually happen in Europe and eventually happen in the US. So moving up north into our friends up in Great Britain, we have the services PMI virtually unchanged. So what it's saying is the services sector expanded at the same rate as it did, 62.9 versus 62.4, as it did there. So some potential signs of a peak. Let's move on into the Tuesday. Oh, I thought we were already in Tuesday data. No, we weren't. All right, so into Tuesday data, some interesting things out of Germany. The economic sentiment, the ZEW, went from 79.8, missing expectations of 75.2 to 63.3. So, you know, can the survey of how people feel about the current economy is decreasing in Germany, not exactly what you want to see at this time. And you look at the broad Eurozone, the same economic sentiment went from 81 to 61. So, you know, suggesting again that we're seeing, we're going to see peaks in the data. This is July data, the PMI data was June. How about we move into the US? We have two PMIs. We have the market services PMI comes out first, expanded at the same rate, 64.8 versus 64.6. So again, suggesting services sector in the US is starting to peak. How about the official ISM non-manufacturing or services? Well, let's go over to there. And what do we see? Went from 64 to 60.1. Now, where is that in relation to the peak? Well, 64 right now is a peak in May, suggesting that the U.S. services sector might be done. And we're going to look at some more data on that. How about new orders? Looking at digging a little deeper here. Oh, we got business activity expanded at a slower rate. New orders, slightly slower rate. Employment. Slight, very, 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 very slight contraction. What is this telling you for the labor market? Not a positive sign. If the service sector isn't hiring, well, that may tell you that the last non-farm payroll report is going to get revised lower at some point, or telling you that the next one isn't going to be that good. How about supplier deliveries down slightly, expanded at a slightly slower rate, inventories unchanged, prices unchanged, still prices moving up, you know, pretty high, backlog of orders up a little bit. So there's, you know, you think about this employment situation and you say, okay, well, if the new orders are still increasing at a decent clip and they're not hiring, what does that tell you about the services sector? Either they can't get the people they want, which is generally the view the services sector has, or they're starting to automate and they believe the demand is going to fall away and they can get caught up. There's a couple of different outcomes, but so far we're seeing indications of a peak there. But what about the rest of the data? Well, let's go back and see what else we've got here as we move into today. Said back over to France, exports and imports, they're decreased. Now remember, if your economy is expanding, your exports and imports should be increasing. So in May, they were, we'll just say, down slightly. So what does that tell you? Again, the exports and imports are suggesting that what the other data is going to tell us is the France economy, the French economy is peaking. How about we go into the U.S. data today? What do we have? Mortgage applications down 1.8%. You know, you don't get a continued housing boom if mortgage applications keep falling. And then we'll move into the JOLTS, the job opening and labor turnover survey in May. Survey said 9.2 million jobs, a record peak. Now, how do we get a record peak? Well, they revised the month down slightly. But what is the bond market telling you about the labor market? Well, you'll notice here's 10-year treasury yields. And as yields go down, well, the number of job openings go down. As yields go up, job openings go up, yields go down, job openings go down. Yields are meandering here, but you know, trying to trend up. Job openings go up, yields go down, and then job openings go down. Now, job openings are going up, yields are going up. What is that telling you is when you see these structural moves down in yields, it's telling you something very, very important. Financial conditions are indeed tightening. Now, I have some more data. We don't have time on the commitment of traders report, some charts from our buddy Skyway. We'll try to take a look at those tomorrow. But anyways, I wanted you to get a big picture here and see how the Fed is bailing out the SEC, going to likely take control of the money markets. If the Fed screws up, they could slip into negative territory and require a lot of intervention from the Fed. We're seeing signs in the economic data that things are slowing down. And the bond markets telling the labor market, all those job openings, about to go away. Anyways, thanks for being fans. Thanks for subscribing. We'll see you back, of course, on Friday for the Macro Show. I'm Steve Admeter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It is not intended to provide investor or other advice. The material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell security, financial instrument, or to participate in particular trading strategies. Video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in personal capacity. Business expressed this video that do not reflect the Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.